Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington.
And I'm Nabil Biagio, also in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, February 13th, 2015. South Sudan Council of Ministers decide to extend the mandate of President Kiir and the parliament.
In our quest for peace, the cabinet decided to call off the elections and extend the lifespan of the elective positions, so that we give peace the chance.
And rebels say Juba's decision is unconstitutional.
I do not know where they're basing this extension of the government and parliament on. Is it on the constitution? Is it the powers of the president? To me, I think this is just complicating the attainment of peace.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan is postponing national elections that were set for June 30th. Government spokesman Michael Makwey announced the decision today in Juba. He also said the terms of President Salva Kiir and the National Assembly will be extended in line with the power-sharing proposal brokered by IGAD and signed at the start of this month by Mr. Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar.
Bearing in mind this agreement and the situation, And our commitment to agree and operationalize the agreement, the government found it inappropriate to continue with the elections after this. In our quest for peace, the cabinet decided to call off the elections and extend the lifespan of the cabinet, of the elective positions, so that we give peace the chance.
The terms of the president and the National Assembly will be extended
for 2 years with effect from the 9th July 2015 to the 9th July 2017.
Ever since the government announced in December that it has set aside more than $500 million to fund the elections, there have been calls for the vote to be delayed until peace has been restored in South Sudan. The power-sharing proposal that was signed by Mr. Kiir and Machar 2 weeks ago calls for the elections to be delayed and for a transitional government of national unity to be set up by July 9th of this year and remain in power for 30 months. It says elections will not be held before the end of the transitional period, so not before December 2017. The proposal also calls for the tenure of the National Assembly to be extended for 30 months from July 9th and for the number of lawmakers to be expanded from just over 300 to 400. Makwey says that delaying the elections and extending the tenures of the president and parliament,
this is a clear expression of the government that it is serious and it means peace.
He says the National Assembly will debate both issues next week. The SPLM in opposition says the decision by the Council of Ministers to extend the mandate of President Kiir and the parliament will complicate efforts of bringing peace to the country. Former Vice President and rebel leader Riek Machar says extending the mandate of President Kiir will prolong the war and the suffering of the people of South Sudan. Machar says the best option for Juba is to dissolve Mr. Kiir's cabinet.
What they should have done was ask President Kiir to resign. This is what will bring about peace. I do not know where they're basing this extension of the government and parliament on. Is it on the constitution? Is it the powers of the president? Because he has sweeping powers. To me, I think this is just complicating the attainment of peace. We are supposed to be sitting again on the 20th of this month and discuss peace and hopefully get an agreement.
In a situation like this, where a government announces that it is extending the mandate of the parliament and of the sitting president, what is the legality of such a move?
It is just sheer, they're not acting according to law. Cannot understand it. I do not know what they want by doing this. Just to remain in power, just to give Salva Kiir 2 more years to destroy the country. I think this is
The IGAD proposal that was given to both of you last time before you signed the areas of agreement on the 1st of February, it talked about increasing the number of members of parliament to 400. And now they're extending the mandate of this current parliament. Where does that leave that agreement?
We did not agree. It was one point of disagreement. Our position is that this parliament should be dissolved by the 8th of March. This government should dissolve itself by 8th of March. The parliament loses its legitimacy by the 8th of March. So if there is going to be a reconstitution of parliament, it should be by an agreement. We have not yet agreed on that. We were saying we needed even a smaller size parliament, 250, once the parliament is dissolved by 8th of March. The whole country has no money to spend on a large parliament. A smaller parliament at this time is imperative. 250 would be good, but you need to dissolve the 332 current parliament.
What is your expectations for the next round of talks that is starting next week? Do you see any hope? Because you have been sitting and talking and talking, and analysts in the region are saying there is no results out of these talks. Do you see any prospects for ending the violence through the last phase of the talks next week?
Despite the new communication done by the Council of Ministers that they have extended the life of the government, the presidency of Salva Kiir, for another 2 more years, and the life of parliament for another 2 years. To me, that is a complication. But there are still serious issues which we have not agreed upon. One, the structure of the leadership of the transitional government. This is not agreed. The parliament itself, its composition, has not been agreed. We have not agreed on fundamental issues on federalism. We have not agreed on security arrangements. We have not agreed on the accountability agenda. Our position is that if peace is to come to the country, the report of Obasanjo, the AU Commission of Inquiry on Violations in South Sudan, must be made public. We now understand that the AU and Peace and Security Council does not want to make this document public. This report must be made public. What do I explain to the people whose kins have been murdered, massacred, the genocide taken in Jubo? What do I explain to them?
That's rebel leader Riek Machar is speaking to my colleague John Tanza from the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa earlier today. A National Assembly lawmaker from Mundiri West County was shot twice last night in what a local official calls an apparent assassination attempt. Joseph Ngere was walking home a little before midnight last night when
a certain unknown gunman stopped him about 5 meter distance from him and asked him, "Who are you?" And then he said, "Honorable Joseph Ngere," and Ngere asked him also, "Who are you?" Immediately he fired bullets, 3 bullets, one on his right leg, then the other on the left, then the other missed.
That's John Kaliopas, acting commissioner of Mundiri West County. Kaliopas says Ngere was able to call for help. The police arrived on the scene and took him to hospital. An investigation into the attack has been opened.
We are now on the ground since yesterday. They're on the ground trying to collect some news and all this to investigate. Up to now, the process is still going on.
Kaliopas says he believes the attack was premeditated. He thinks the shooter was hiding in the dark, waiting for Ngere to show up.
According to my view, maybe this the gunman is rejected our honorable Ngere. But due to what reason, that I cannot answer. Maybe political or something of that kind. But to me, I don't know. There is no reason, according to me, because he's representing the county and he's a good man in his place. I don't know what is wrong.
Back in December, the director of national security in Munduri West County was shot dead at night. His killer was never identified and is believed to be still at large. In recent months, there has been a lot of violence between pastoralists and farmers in the region. But Kiliopas says attacks like the one on Ingere and clashes between herders and farmers are isolated incidents and that Munduri West County is generally safe. The government says rebel forces, once again, attacked their positions in Bantiu, the capital of Unity State, this morning. But rebel forces say there has been an escalation of attacks on their positions by government forces this week. VOA fellow Lucy Pony has more.
Government Army spokesperson Philip Aguer says today's clashes began with an attack by rebel forces.
Yeah, the rebel have attacked a fellow position as the outpost SPLA in Bantiu, a distance of 3 miles.
Aguer says it's not clear if the fighting has stopped or whether there are any casualties since he was unable to get in touch with his field commanders. The opposition denies claims that they attacked government forces. Opposition military spokesman Lou Leroy Kong says clashes between the two sides did not just start today.
In the last 2 days, we saw escalation in armed clashes in Unity State and in Upper Nile State. Today in the morning, the government troops moved out of their defensive positions in Bantiu. They attacked our positions at Tomangur on your way to Nyalio, and also attacked our positions in Gwit County. So today there were attacks. Close to two counties. There's Rupkoni County and Gwit County. That's in Unity State. And in Upper Nile State, there were clashes in 3 counties in the last 3 days.
Roy says government forces also attacked their defensive positions in Nasir County of Upper Nile State yesterday, where he claims they burnt down villages and stole a number of cattle. He also says there was fighting in Maban County.
Regarding the clashes we heard in Bilagor, it ended after some few minutes. But I'm still waiting for details from the field commanders.
Both forces have accused each other of repeatedly violating the cessation of hostilities agreement signed a year ago and recommitted to several times since then. This marks the third time this week that the parties have accused one another of opening fresh attacks. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America, a public discussion in Juba over the prospects of peace in South Sudan. That story after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Do you use a mosquito net at night?
Yeah, I use a mosquito net at night to prevent myself from getting malaria because they're told that mosquitoes are get us to get sick.
No, I don't because I have a phobia with mosquito nets.
I do use a mosquito net because there are a lot of mosquitoes. But obviously, when they bite me, I get sick and I hate that weird noise they make. So I better sleep in a mosquito net. I think it's better.
Yes, I sleep on a mosquito net at night simply because the mosquitoes which are raging around the country. So I love to protect myself from the mosquito bites and the malaria infection. So that's why I sleep on a mosquito net.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Participants at a public discussion today on the South Sudanese peace process is sponsored by the South Sudan Law Society say they doubt the two warring parties will sign a final peace deal by the March 5th deadline agreed to by both sides. SPLM-DC leader Lama Cole says they are not ready to make the necessary concessions required to achieve peace. Charlton Doki has more for VOA from Juba.
SPLM-DC leader Lam Akol Ajawin says the leaders of the warring parties do not have the political will to end the fighting.
The parties to the armed conflict are not serious to stop the war. And the evidence to this is very clear that they have never respected the cessation of hostilities agreement. Even 2 days ago, they were talking about fighting in many places, Bantiu, Nasir, Kaka, whatever.
Akol says the government and rebel negotiators are spending too much time talking about power sharing rather than issues affecting the country. He says the parties should specify in any final peace deal how they will punish those involved in widespread human rights abuses, which include killings, lootings, and rape.
As soon as they made sure that it is bilateral now, you notice that nobody talks anymore about accountability. They will not talk about accountability. And without accountability, then we are saying that impunity should rule.
More than 10,000 people were killed in the fighting. Lona James Elia, head of the local NGO Voice for Change, says any final peace agreement should represent the interests of all communities.
We wanted an inclusive government that will give a representation to the 64 tribes of South Sudan, regardless of where you're going to come from. And also we need to advocate for maybe presidential rotation.
And she says a final peace deal must include affirmative action laws to improve the status of South Sudanese women.
We need to reform areas such as representation of women and who even select them, who elect them.
Beny Gideon Mabor of the South Sudan Law Society agrees there should be multi-stakeholder peace talks, including civil society, religious groups and political parties, and he says the constitution must be reformed once peace is restored.
The president should not appoint members of parliament into executive. This is to allow the checks and balance of the assembly to be very strong.
And Mabor says civil society activists should be included in a proposed joint monitoring and evaluation commission tasked with overseeing the implementation of a final peace agreement. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
27 journalists have undergone 3 days of training on ethics of journalism and freedom of expression in WOW. Oliver Modi, chairman of the Union of Journalists of South Sudan, which sponsored the workshop, says this year alone his office has recorded more than 15 incidents of threats against journalists. He says many journalists are quitting because of harassment and repeated threats from security officials. Oliver Modi says the future of South Sudan depends on a free media establishment.
We have a threat from the side of the security sector. They are making us life difficult for journalists to operate, such that unnecessary arrest, detention of journalists, harassment of journalists, and so on, become the order of the day in the country. So for that matter, you find we have a number of journalists dropping out. They are saying now, if that is the work of journalists, it's threatening our lives, better we leave the work of journalism.
Modi says his office has recorded more than 15 cases of detention, harassment, and even the killing of journalists in 2015. He says more must be done to protect journalists' rights. 33-year-old Vicky John Assan, who works for a local radio station in WOW, is among the 27 journalists participating in the training. She says as a female journalist, it's particularly difficult to do her job due to cultural attitudes toward women.
As a female journalist, no difference between a female journalist or a man journalist. Because what males do as a journalist is professional. The same thing as female journalists can do. According to the concept of our community, sometimes they say that the female journalist cannot work as a male journalist.
Vicky Assan says she wishes the government would include journalism in the curriculum of the education system in the country in order to help children realize their dreams. 30-year-old Aguer Atem Baraj, who works for Mayardit FM radio station in Warap State, admits some failure on the part of journalists when it comes to ethics. Atem hopes this training will help him and several other journalists keep their ethics in check.
Some of us can publish a story out of context of the law, but if we work professionally on the ethic of journalists, that will actually help us a lot. So we were refreshed on the importance of the ethics and other things we're writing over the stories, and also safety of journalists, because we are always on the risk.
President Salva Kiir signed the media bill into law in September last year, but the Minister of Information has yet to officially publish the new law. This report was prepared by VOA fellow Michael Atit in Washington. Today is United Nations World Radio Day, a time to focus on the role of radio to educate, inform, and entertain people worldwide. The UN says radio is the most accessible and commonly used form of media in South Sudan, given the country's underdeveloped infrastructure. But not all parts of the country have access to radio programming, which can mean the difference between life and death during conflict situations. Philip Thoneleu talked to one devoted radio listener in Juba and has this report.
James Lodu listens to music coming from a small radio that sits on a wooden table in front of him as he relaxes under a tree at home. Lodu says he tunes in various local FM radio stations depending on what kind of program he wants to hear at any given moment. It is lunch time, so music is Lodu's choice. He says he relies on radio, not just for entertainment.
First radio, because any information that comes from radio is true information.
Lodu says there's another reason radio is preferred media outlet.
Of course, radio is very cheaper than TV. I can manage to buy radio than TV.
Lodu says since fighting erupted in December 2013, radio has been the best source of information on programs at the IGAD-mediated peace talks in Ethiopia and recurring violations of the cessation of hostilities agreement by the two warring parties. Lydia Gachungi, a UNESCO communication specialist in Juba, says this is true. Radio is widespread in South Sudan.
South Sudan does not have very good internet connection, especially in the rural areas. The platform that the poor and the marginalized and the people who are living in other states rely on mostly is the radio.
Gachungi calls radio an important lifeline in South Sudan. She says TV and newspapers are expensive and very few South Sudanese can afford them. While the reach of local radio stations is still limited, USAID project recently announced in Juba is designed to address the problem. According to a 2013 UNESCO assessment, a significant number of South Sudanese in rural areas continue to rely on international media reports by listening to shortwave and medium waves radio stations.
For example, we've been to the greater Tibor, like places like Pojala. We do not have cigar radio, we do not have newspaper, we do not have mobile telephony. It still needs to be done a lot for the radio to reach everybody in this country.
Gachungi says people within broadcast range of radio stations in South Sudan contribute to program by calling studio phones on issues of peace and reconciliation. The international theme for this year's World Radio Day is youth and radio. UNESCO says it is promoting greater participation of youth in radio, not only as listeners, but as producers and broadcasters. In Juba today, UNESCO is partnering with local radio stations to host a series of live debate on peace and reconciliations. For VOA News, I am Philip Thoneleu in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Nabil. Police in Pakistan say militants attacked a Shiite mosque in northwest Pakistan today, killing at least 19 people and wounding 60 others. Explosions and gunfire were heard during the attack on the mosque in Peshawar, where worshippers had gathered for evening prayers. The attack on the mosque is the latest in a rising tide of sectarian violence in Pakistan. The Pakistani Taliban has claimed responsibility for the attack. Security officials in Chad say Boko Haram militants from Nigeria have killed at least 5 people during an early morning attack in Chad. The officials say the militants attacked a village on the shores of Lake Chad, but were eventually repelled by the government's army. It's the first time Boko Haram has carried out an attack in Chad, which has joined a regional offensive against the Islamic militant group. And finally, Ukraine's military says 11 soldiers were killed and 40 wounded in fighting in eastern Ukraine in the past day, despite a ceasefire deal reached yesterday. The ceasefire was not yet in effect. Military officials say the fighting was particularly intense around Debaltseve, a key transport hub that has been hotly contested in recent days. The agreement was signed by representatives of Ukraine's government, the Russia-backed separatists, the Russian government, and the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe in the Belarusian capital, Minsk, after 16 hours of talks. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
We are a little bit sad today at South Sudan in Focus and in VOA's English to Africa. After 18 months, we are saying goodbye to Nabil Biagio. Nabil has been working at VOA on a fellowship for young professionals, and now it's time for him to return home, where hopefully he can apply what he learned here at VOA. Nabil is a keen observer of the world around him, and during his time here, he quickly learned the skills of broadcast journalism, and no doubt you've heard his reports on developments in Sudan and South Sudan. From the day he walked in the doors at VOA, Nabil impressed all of us with his command of English and his knowledge of American culture. Nabil Biagio is truly special, and he touched the hearts of all of us. His personality and good humor make him a joy to be around, and with his easy smile, his sense of humor, his sense of curiosity and desire to learn new things. Our office is going to be a little quieter next week and less fun. We all hope that Nabil enjoyed working at VOA as much as we enjoyed working with him, and that he learned as much from us as we did from him. We expect big things for him, and we know he will succeed wherever life takes him. And that's the end of our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song "For the Amour" by Congolese musician JB Piana.
L'amour, est-ce aimer ou être aimé? Bien que l'amour soit le symbole d'un sentiment partagé, être aimé n'est jamais le signe d'un bonheur parfait. Ingénieur, Bobalinana. Asusuli basa ya kolinga moto.
We've been listening to JB in piano with the song For De La Move. I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
And I'm John Tanza, also here in Washington. Thanks for listening and especially for joining us as we bid farewell to Nabil Biagio. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Night day. Now, Ben Afamia, Adam Bumbole.